Chapter 9. "First, please," I called as I looked into the waiting room. There was an old lady with a cat in a cardboard box, two small boys trying to keep hold of a rabbit, and somebody I didn't recognize at first. Then I remembered. It was Soames. When it was his turn, he came into the surgery, but he was a vastly different character from the one I knew. He wore an ingratiating smile. His head bobbed up and down as he spoke. He radiated anxiety to please. And the most interesting thing was that his right eye was puffed and closed and surrounded by an extensive area of bluish-black flesh.
"I hope you don't mind me coming to see you, Mr. Elliot," he said. "The fact is, I have resigned my position with his lordship and am looking for another post. I was wondering if you and Mr. Farnan would put in a word for me if you heard of anything."
I was too astonished at the transformation to say much. I replied that we would do what we could, and Soames thanked me effusively and bowed himself out. I turned to Siegfried after he'd gone.
"Well, what do you make of that?"
"Oh, I know all about it."
Siegfried looked at me with a wry smile.
"Remember I told you he was working one or two shady sidelines up there, selling a few bags of corn or a hundredweight of fertilizer here and there? Well, it all mounted up, but it didn't last. He got a bit careless, and he was out on his ear before he knew what had happened."
"And how about the lovely black eye?"
"Oh, he got that from Tommy. You must have seen Tommy when you were there. He's the horseman."
My mind went back to that uncomfortable night, and to the quiet man holding the horse's head.
"I remember him. Big fat chap."
"Yes, he's a big lad. And I'd hate to have him punch me in the eye."
Soames gave him a hell of a life, and as soon as Tommy heard about the sacking, he paid a visit just to settle the score. I was now comfortably settled into the way of life in Skeldale House. At first I wondered where Tristan fitted into the setup. Was he supposed to be seeing practice, having a holiday, working, or what? But it soon became clear that he was a factotum who dispensed and delivered medicines, washed the cars, answered the phone, and even in an emergency, went to a case. At least, that was how Siegfried saw him, and he had a repertoire of tricks aimed at keeping him on his toes. Like returning unexpectedly, or bursting into a room, in the hope of catching him doing nothing. He never seemed to notice the obvious fact that the college vacation was over, and that Tristan should have been back there. I came to the conclusion over the next few months that Tristan must have had some flexible arrangement with the college authorities, because, for a student, he seemed to spend a surprising amount of time at home. He interpreted his role rather differently from his brother, and, while resident in Danerby, he devoted a considerable amount of his acute intelligence to the cause of doing as little as possible. Tristan did, in fact, spend much of his time sleeping in a chair. When he was left behind to dispense, when we went out on our rounds, he followed an unvarying procedure. He half-filled a 16-ounce bottle with water, added a few drams of chlorodine, and a little epicacuana, pushed the cork in and took it through to the sitting room to stand by his favourite chair. It was a wonderful chair for his purpose, old-fashioned and high-backed with wings to support the head. He would get out his daily mirror, light a woodbine, and settle down till sleep overcame him. If Siegfried rushed in on him, he grabbed the bottle and started to shake it madly, inspecting the contents at intervals. Then he went through to the dispensary, filled up the bottle, and labelled it. It was a sound, workable system, but it had one big snag. He never knew whether it was Siegfried or not when the door opened, and often I walked in and found him half lying in his chair, staring up with startled, sleep-blurred eyes while he agitated his bottle. Most evenings found him sitting on a high stool at the bar counter of the Drover's Arms, conversing effortlessly with the barmaid. At other times he would be out with one of the young nurses from the local hospital, which he seemed to regard as an agency to provide him with female company. All in all, he managed to lead a fairly full life. Saturday night, 10:30 p.m., and I was writing up my visits when the phone rang. I swore, crossed my fingers, and lifted the receiver.
"Hello, Harriet speaking."
"Oh, it's you, is it?" growled a dour voice in broadest Yorkshire.
"Well, I want Mr. Farnan."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Farnan is out. Can I help you?"
"Well, I hope so. but I'd far rather have your boss. This is Sims of Beale Close.
Oh, no, please, no, not Beale Close on a Saturday night.
Miles up in the hills at the end of a rough lane with about 8 gates. Yes, Mr. Sims, and what is the trouble?
I'll tell you.
There is some trouble and all. I have a grand big show horse here, all of 17 hands. He's cut himself badly in the hind leg just above the hock. I want him stitched immediately.
Glory be. Above the hock. What a charming place to have to stitch a horse.
Unless he's very quiet, this is going to be a real picnic.
How big is the wound, Mr. Sims?
Big? It's a girt big thing, about a foot long and bleeding like hell. And this horse is as wick as an eel. Could kick a fly's eye out. I can't get near him, nohow. Goes straight up wall when he sees anybody, bargo, I tell you. I had him to a blacksmith the other day, and a fellow was dead scared of him. Twilting girt oss he is.
Damn you, Mr. Sims. Damn Beale Close, and damn your twilting girt oss.
Well, I'll be along straight away. Try and have some men handy, just in case we have to throw him.
Throw him? Throw him? You'd never throw this oss. He'd kill you first.
Anyways, I have no men here, so you'll have to manage on your own. And old Mr. Farnham wouldn't want a lot of men to help him.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. This is going to be one for the diary.
Very well, I'm leaving now, Mr. Sims.
Oh, I nearly forgot. Me road got washed away in the floods yesterday. You'll have to walk the last mile and a half. So get a move on and don't keep me waiting all night.
This is just a bit much. Look here, Mr. Sims, I don't like your tone. I said I would leave now, and I will get there just as soon as I can.
You don't like my tone, eh? Well, I don't like useless young apprentices practising on me good stock, so I don't want no cheek from you. You know now it's about damn job, any road.
That finally does it. Now just listen to me, Sims. If it wasn't for the sake of the horse, I'd refuse to come out at all. Who do you think you are, anyway? If you ever try to speak to me like that again...
Now, Jim, get a grip on yourself. Take it easy, old boy. You'll burst a blood vessel if you go on like this.
Who the devil...
Jim.
Calm yourself now.
That temper of yours, you know. You really have to watch it.